I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello and welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamblet and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Raw and SmackDown, but also NXT, AEW, Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a buddy good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, joined by Hamlet and Sidgwick to review Monday Night Raw, though. And Hamlet, a lovely long bank holiday weekend, family, friends, sun, seaside, barbecues, beers, and then Raw comes along and ruins it all yet again.
Yeah, really depressingly bad. That sums up really nicely. Family, friends, and feelings. And not just from those family and friends, but feelings from a pro wrestling show. So Raw has no right to earn a place amongst those things after the weekend that we just had. Because if you didn't have a particularly nice bank holiday weekend for the pandemic, or because you don't like your family and friends, that's fine too. But if you listen to this podcast, odds are you're a wrestling fan and you probably had a really nice weekend feeling of pro wrestling. I would say this is back down to earth with a thud, but WWE doesn't exist in earth. Does it? Like the Thunderdome and Vince McMahon's mind is no longer of this planet. This was WWE. This was bad.
I'm not qualified for this job anymore because I've run out of things to say. Like, for several years, I thought, what is the funniest way to bury this? Or what Simpsons joke can I adapt to bury this? It's just unburyable. Like, it's just it's bones in the ground. It's dead. Well, I'll obviously think of things to say throughout. It's just irredeemably bad, will never be good, and it's not worthy of my time nor analysis.
In better news, not only are we doing the NXT preview, of course, later on today, myself and the Dudleys will be sitting down to review Double or Nothing later on as well, obviously slightly delayed due to the bank holiday, but we'll be discussing that show that Hamlet alluded to, actually being fun and entertaining and making you feel something. Right, let's start on Monday Night Raw. It opened up with Corey Graves and the face of Jimmy Smith, the man who's just realised he's made a huge mistake on by joining Raw's commentary team. There was a Memorial Day video, and we opened up with Miz TV with The Miz and John Morrison. And I have to say, lads, talk about encapsulating the real, oh God, Raw's here, isn't it? This segment is everything that is wrong with WWE encapsulated here. So Miz opens up and he says, oh, everybody give a big welcome back to me. I'm back and I've been injured. He got serious talking about his match with Damian Priest. Neglected to mention the zombie bollocks that happened. But there was allusions to that in the form of John Morrison wearing garlic around his neck. Miz had noticed a bad smell. Morrison was wearing it. He also had the drip stick to defend against potential attacks. He's talking vampires, he's talking mummies, he's talking aliens, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they introduce their guest. It is Charlotte Flair. She's like, oh, what is that smell? She doesn't like it. She said she's going to become a champion again at Hell in a Cell. Miz says, oh, how many times champion is that? She says, 14-time champion. But who's counting? Me. I guess I'm counting. And Miz and Morrison die of laughter. I mean, this is what I mean by this being encapsulating how bad Raw is. She said, hey, look, Rhea Ripley, she's world champion. She had a great time of it. It's a fairy tale story of hers, but real life isn't a fairy tale. Dreams, they turn into nightmares. And in 3 weeks, I'm going to send Rhea. Rhea Ripley enters. She says, you're going to send me to hell? You can go to hell. Miz and Morrison don't want them to fight. They want to learn more about the mysterious Rhea Ripley. What do her tattoos mean? What's her motivations, et cetera, et cetera? And Morrison says, hey, pop quiz, what's your favorite garlic bread recipe? And Miz is like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm trying to make sure she's not a vampire. They don't like garlic. Rhea says, that's got to be the dumbest thing I ever heard. I'm not a vampire. I'm a nightmare to everyone.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Look that. I'm a nightmare for everyone in the Raw Women's Division. She said she's going to beat Charlotte. Charlotte says, how are you going to beat me when you can beat Nikki Cross? And they say, oh, yeah, you lost to Nikki Cross last week in that two-minute beat-the-clock bollocks. They showed the footage. Cross came out. She said, look, I beat the women's champion last week. Should only be fair that I faced the winner of the match at Hell in a Cell, faced whoever's the world champion after Hell in a Cell. Ripley went, well, if that clock had 4 minutes on it, I could have beaten you. You wouldn't even be standing here. But you did earn my respect. Charlotte was like, piss off, Nikki. Cross said, I can beat you too. Charlotte went, I can beat you in a minute. So Cross slapped her. Charlotte called her a troll and they accept the match. Before we get to the other beat the clock challenge, Sidge, your thoughts on this opening segment?
I pressed pause. Somehow I didn't press pause during this to go onto Twitter or do any kind of distraction. I sat through this and watched it. And then when I realized what this segment sought to accomplish, I pressed pause on not something I'm paying for. A browser that will go unnamed. And when I pressed pause, I arrived at the timestamp 17 minutes. I know they did the Murakarara at the start, but that's still TV time. 17 minutes of television time. It's bad enough when they do this every week for 2 decades to set up a main event, right? 17 minutes via excruciating verbiage promo train and props. 17 minutes to set up a 2-minute beat the clock match, which was designed to build a match between two unlikable dickheads trying to determine who can most quickly defeat some little babyface dickhead who celebrates not getting beat as a victory from out of nowhere, having done nothing for 6 months. Oh, there's Nikki Cross. All right. Where's she been? Gays. I could not think of a bigger waste of my time, a worse way to build a match that any other promotion could book well or promote well in Charlotte versus Rhea Ripley. I just hate it.
Yeah, the kids aren't up at the start of an episode of Raw. So I was like desperately looking around for any kind of distraction. And then luckily like another wrestler's music hit. So I was just staring into space for that for about 5 minutes. And that was what I needed to pull me away from this. Rhea Ripley was the worst of the bunch this week, but you can rotate that on any given week. Because they're all awful. Yeah, there's absolutely nobody to like. Rhea Ripley, walking, talking, acting as if she's just secured a place in the playoffs on the last weekend of the season, when in reality, she's smashing the ball into her own net. Like, over and over.
She's a champion.
Yeah, like, over and over again. The whole thing, like, it's not some sort of, like, witty comeback to say, I know I didn't beat you in 2 minutes, but I would have done it in 4.
Yeah.
You said you could beat her in 2. That's on you. Like, Charlotte, like, just to sort of follow on from that, I could beat her in 1. Challenge after the break, 2 minutes.
I was confused by that.
No, man, like, Jesus Christ. And like on the prop, because John Morrison and The Miz, like, I feel like I'm maybe like being way too charitable and way too generous. But sometimes Ms. Morrison, and specifically John Morrison, tries to like talk or act in a way that like tries to get all the bad material through the force of will. The drip stick just reminded me of the shake weight from the episode of South Park. And this program's, I was going to say for kids, it's not, it's for toddlers. You cannot do that. You cannot have some ginormous spunking device on anymore. So they couldn't get that over either, nor particularly the garlic. This is miserable. This was miserable.
And then we got the beat the clock match, as Sid said, 17 minutes to lead to a 2-minute match. The first minute of which was just Nikki Cross getting out of the ring whenever Charlotte came nearer. Charlotte cuts her off after confronting Ripley on the outside, attacks her. Cross hits a tornado DDT. Charlotte fights back, tries to put in the figure four to transition it obviously into the figure eight, but time runs out and Cross goes, another win for me, baby. And then we go, well, I can't wait to see these two losers who've both lost to Nikki Cross face off at Hell in a Cell.
Literally two unlikable heels working a title program. I mean, it's worse than ever. And it is. Like, I used to hate John Cena for years. Delighted at his cancellation, can I just say. This stupid, inspirational life coach, Gwyneth Paltrow, dickhead on Twitter. Ah, miss John Cena. I liked him. Go back and watch like two consecutive episodes of Raw with him at the helm. You don't like John Cena. And if you do, you're an idiot. Right? Even then, when he was a cruel, witless bully being horrible to people, at least it was clear that he was meant to be a babyface to somebody, right? Mm. I was not a 5-year-old, 7-year-old child when John Cena was at his peak, but I endured it knowing that, right, okay, there's an audience for him and a big one. So I know why he does the things that he does. What is this? What is Charlotte Flair versus Rhea Ripley? How could anyone possibly like, support, root for, identify with either of these people? Two losers, one of them's a champion. Two losers who are just awful about to have a fight. We're so far removed from Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior and Bret Hart and Steve Austin. It's literally not even funny.
I forget which podcast it was last week. I feel like I appealed a campaign heart and sleeve for there to be like one episode of Raw where there wasn't an image of a babyface celebrating like ill-gotten gains on the floor. WWE produced that image 4 times in the opening match of this episode of Raw. Nikki Cross. That was a whole MO. Stand on the outside and cheerlead for yourself about how you're about to steal the victory. One match. And we got it more than once this episode.
The highlight of the opening, what? 20, 25 minutes of this show was Morrison ruining Charlotte Flair's entrance by singing along to it. Ridiculous. So we go backstage. It's Riddle and Damian Priest. They're having a chat. They're all jazzed about crowds coming back. Riddle's asking about how to say some phrases in Spanish. He gets an Eddie Guerrero line in there. And then he says, how do you say, hey, Randy? And Priest says, hey, Randy. Riddle thinks, oh, it might be more of a translation there. But never mind all that bollocks. Randy Orton's got a goatee and he's here. He's here to mess things up on Monday Night Raw. Riddle says how excited he is to see him. Talks about obviously hitting the RKO last week. Orton was clearly a bit peeved about Riddle utilizing his finisher. But regardless, he said, we're going to have to work together if we're going to be a tag team. Why don't you come down? Why don't you join me at ringside for my match with Xavier Woods? And they did the whole shutting your mouth and locking it shut and tossing the key and then Riddle searching for the key bollocks pamphlet.
You say like, oh, Riddle searching for the key bollocks because we've just become so acceptant of it. We've become so numb to it. He's scooting around on the floor looking for an invisible key. Like, you can have one R-Truth and you've got one R-Truth and he's really good at being R-Truth. That's the benefit of having this one specific R-Truth is that he's the best R-Truth there is. And the whole point of all of this, this goes back to the, I'm going to invoke the Bray Wyatt Undertaker debate of a few weeks ago. context of these particular types of characters is absolutely everything. R-Truth, you have almost entire creative freedom for him to be as stupid, as confused as whatever you want, because it's in the DNA of his gimmick. He sells it really well, and he's got like fairly proven form to like get this stuff over as well. You can't just make everybody R-Truth. You can't make your entire locker room R-Truth. Randy Orton might well be setting up Riddle to eventually eat an RKO and have their big SummerSlam program or whatever, and people are quite invested in it. Like, it's quite entertaining. Their chemistry is pretty good. You sense the match, the payoff will all be pretty good. But Randy Orton became a sympathetic character when Matt Riddle started scooting around looking for an invisible key, didn't he? Because you would turn on him too. Because you just can't, you can't do that. These people aren't real human beings. Randy Orton is much closer to being a real human being. So he would look at this, be like, this dickhead, like, this dickhead knows that, like, not even a five-year-old would fall for that, doesn't he? I'm going to have to kick him in the head now because I can't trust him. They're taking the one good thing on the show and they're reducing it to everything else in WWE, which is risible, like, immature, not at all believable comedy. And, like, this angle is the best thing on Raw by, like, a frightening distance.
Maybe Riddle's going to turn on Randy Orton and he's going to say, you know why I did what I did, Randy? Because you've got my nose. Give it back, Randy! Give me my nose back!
I watched this with the faintest glimmer of, just, I'm going to go a little bit closer to the mic so you can, my reaction can be captured. Because Orton Riddle were kind of both corpsing. Like, Riddle smirked, Orton smirked as he went off camera, and Riddle sort of did this knowing how stupid it was, and he kind of broke at the end. My, was informed purely because I could, in my head canon, see them both just having a joint outside of the Thunderdome, looking at the script and going, fucking hell. The state of this. And I've inferred that from the fact that they were both breaking this new, what an absolute load of bollocks. The tiniest, like, bleed through of real people just on this show is so crucial to my enjoyment of it that I halfway liked this.
So then we got Randy Orton versus Xavier Woods, not on the level of Xavier Woods versus Riddle last week, but still competent. Best thing I could say here. We come back from the break. Orton's got a chin lock. Of course he has. Woods comes back, strikes, rolling elbow. Orton power bombs him out of the corner for a two count. He goes for a draping DDT, takes an age. So Woods counters into an arm breaker. Orton comes back, hits the draping DDT. Woods counters an out RKO into a backslide for a two count. In the end, Orton catches Woods as he comes off the ropes and he catches him, realizes he's got him in the perfect place, looks at Riddle, hits the bro Derek for the 1-2-3. And Riddle couldn't have been happier. Fine, this, Sidge, in terms of a match.
Yeah, it's the best word. Honestly, it puts me in such a great mood watching a Raw match like this, because I realize that when I now analyze it for my income, I can just say, yeah, it's fine. And I can say that, the word leaves my mouth, time elapses, and I can go and work on my project that I'm really excited about quicker than I would be had I had to actually really focus on and write notes for and get the story beats. Randy Orton and Xavier Woods are talented to varying degrees, and they had a match that was consistent with their abilities. Post-match, I half liked Orton's, this little bastard is getting me on board here. They're doing all right things with this.
Yeah, Orton's, like, in-ring character work is entirely informed by somebody else being more entertaining than him on the floor, and him being a part of a more entertaining story. Woods was good again. Really enjoying him getting like back-to-back singles matches and having more of an opportunity to just show himself off lately. But it's funny that it comes at a time where they're pushing Kofi Kingston instead in the top line, because it's only serving to expose that, like, the angle's really good and Kofi wants another bite of Kofi Mania, but like, maybe it should be Woods Mania. Maybe it should be Woods in a cell. Like, he's far more versatile than most headliners at the moment. I'm more interested in seeing what he could do at a very high level, even though ultimately he's kind of a bit player in this, because you assume they're going to go to RK-Bro versus the New Day as the grand payoff of some fashion to this. But I like this, and it was a good length as well. So under 10 minutes is ideal for that kind of fine and functional type of Raw match, because you can't even resent it. There's not worse than when this sort of stuff badly outstays its welcome and goes like 15 plus when the angle's kind of like too thin a premise, and it didn't here. So this was decent.
Throughout the night, I'm not really going to cover a lot of this, to be perfectly honest, because nothing was important in terms of what was said. But throughout the night, we kept coming back to MVP, Bobby Lashley, and the ladies partying in the locker room rather than obviously interfering in the main event. And then in the back, we've got Reginald getting ready for his match with Shayna Baszler. And he said, "I don't need your help, Nia Jax." He didn't. He wanted her to stay in the back. And then we got the match. Shayna Baszler, former NXT record-breaking women's champion, against the wine bloke from SmackDown. Reginald does all of his flippy bollocks, dodges all the offense. She eventually takes him down with a shoulder tackle. He schoolboys her for a two count. He gives her a scoop slam. She eventually knocks him down. She attacks his leg. Former MMA fighter Shayna Baszler attacks his leg, puts an ankle lock in him. He slips out. He hits a spinning crossbody, tries a moonsault. This time Baszler moves. He lands awkwardly on his leg. She's recognized her opportunity. Shayna Baszler, number one contender for the Women's World title at WrestleMania 36. Puts a Kira Feuda clutch on the Cirque du Soleil bloke. And then Pyro goes off. It's spooky bollocks time. She lets go. Of course, surprise roll up. 1, 2, 3. Reginald pins her. Reginald celebrates. He runs off. Shayna Baszler's angry. And Reginald walks to the back. And Nia Jax sort of goes, "Reginald, you won. Yay." That wasn't a delay in our Zoom call, by the way. I don't know what happened. She just sort of went, "Now? Okay. Oh, can't believe it. Well done, mate." The last semblance of any hope I had for Shayna Baszler, and it's gone, Michael Sidgwick. Reginald pins Shayna Baszler.
My last semblance of hope for Shayna Baszler evaporated before Shayna Baszler entered the NXT system. So, could care less.
Honestly, I'm not making this up, mate. I looked on Twitter this morning, and I'm you know what they're like, the mutants, right? I think maybe it was a joke, or maybe someone genuinely, right, saw the image of, jumping ahead slightly, Shayna Baszler and Alexa Bliss and Lily, and went, "Finally, this is the Shayna Baszler we've been waiting for." Are you joking?
They're not, they're just idiots. So, yeah, because my hope for Shayna Baszler evaporated before she entered the NXT system, because even by that point, it was clear that Vince McMahon had totally lost it, and no NXT promotee, much less one who worked an unusual to WWE style, was just going to die. So I don't care about that. So because I don't care about most things, I'm a WWE nihilist, I was impressed. I'm not being funny. Who cares about Shayna Baszler? No one, like, you can't care about any of these people. In terms of athletic movement, creativity, and Reginald selling better than most people do in this company, I could just put this in a little bubble, let it float away, and just watch the bubble, because whatever it's floating away from is just toxic. Reginald's really creative. I actually have fun watching his stuff. And he sold quite impressively, considering that he's really not meant to be that kind of pro wrestler. Reginald could appear on Dark Elevation, and he'd be like, this guy's great. And he would come back in a dynamite with the crowd and get over huge. I like Reginald, you know, I like him. Sorry, Wilbon, but Reginald's cool.
That has to be rooted in the first part of your monologue there in that Shayna Baszler means nothing to you. It has to be.
It is?
Yeah.
Who cares about this match? It's the kind of thing they do.
Yeah. I'm probably somewhere in between both of you, because I was thinking a little bit of Jimmy Smith here. You know, the first...
This is good, you know, we should put him over.
He was very good. I thought, yeah, he was good all night. There was a point during the post-WrestleMania Raw where I was thinking about Dan Burke and being like, right, this is your job now. This is what you have to try and sell. And I was thinking of Jimmy Smith looking at his Raw format and seeing probably just like the bare bones, because Vince McMahon was in the middle of Tippexing it all out anyway. And he saw like, oh, there's a Riddle segment, and there's, oh, and then afterwards we've got like a Shayna Baszler segment. Like, cool. Ex-MMA backgrounds, know how to sell the characteristics of these characters. Finally in my comfort zone after what could be quite a tricky opening segment. And the first one roots around for an invisible key. And the second one loses to a Cirque du Soleil champagne expert. And that's the moment where you're like, no, this is your job. not calling that Kura Fuda clutch and talking about the damage that could do to somebody. But this is your job. What your job is, I'm in a real Friends headspace at the moment after the reunion last week. Your job is to be Joey Tribbiani when Chandler's got to sell those trainers that are on roller skates that got a flame up the side, and Joey just walks in and goes, whoa, it looks like they're on fire. That's your job, Jimmy Smith. It's not to talk about cutting off circulation as she locks Reginald in the Kirifuda clutch. I thought about him because I don't want to think about this, because I'm being given nothing to think about.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Next up, it was a backstage interview with Drew McIntyre, who was, let's be honest, a bit of a knobhead to Kevin Patrick. He talked about respecting Kofi Kingston. He was going to face Kofi, of course, for the opportunity to face Bobby Lashley at Hell in a Cell. He's a man who'd do anything for his family. He's earned everything he's achieved. McIntyre knew what it's like to put everyone's needs ahead of his own. But maybe if he hadn't been so bloody unselfish, he'd have won a world title sooner. What? Okay. McIntyre said he stopped worrying about others to focus on winning the WWE title. It helped him reach the top. He talked about telling his kids about the story of him slaying Brock Lesnar, something Kofi Kingston couldn't do because he's a piece of trash. He said he liked Kingston. Didn't sound like it. He was willing to do everything that Kingston was not, though, and he planned on rolling right over him and going on to face Bobby Lashley out in the cell. And then he told Kevin Patrick, Michael Hamlet, to bugger off.
Like piss poor babyface dialogue given to Drew McIntyre. I can almost hear it in Bruce Prichard's voice, depending on the podcast, where he says, where it's like fleshing out the character. We're talking about his history. We're talking about like his real life, and we're using the mythology of the Drew McIntyre character. Guy comes out with a sword, so of course we can talk about the children he'll one day have and the dragons he slayed and all that. It's not. It's garbage dialogue. It doesn't belong on a television show no more than it belongs in like one of the books I read my kids at night about dragons and swords. Like, this is just a badly done version of that. But what continues to be a theme, it's not a recent theme, but it's one that just feels most prevalent at the moment, is this. They don't realise how often they get their characters to talk about just how much they resent WWE and the choices they've made in their life, right? People gave Cody a lot of stick for the baby news being such a big part of Dynamite a little while ago. Cody and Brandi Rhodes, those don't watch or care, having a baby. And it's Cody's playground, so he can talk about having a baby on his show. But that comes with this sort of like, we're having a baby, we're really happy, the company are evidently really happy for us. Look what we can juggle in our life. Isn't this nice? Ignoring the privilege, just imagine our wrestler, another wrestler, because I feel like they would do that with, if it was like Britt Baker or someone was pregnant, it would just be like, this is nice. We'll see you soon. Isn't this great?
Hmm.
Drew McIntyre's like, I haven't been able to do any of that because of this godforsaken company, because of this stupid job that they make me do. You've got wrestlers whenever anybody, Randy Orton was the most recent one, Soldier Boy making an arsehole of him on Twitter. It's not real. So what do you get? You get like, they'll find a match where they've like really legit hurt themselves, or like Randy will put up a 15 separated shoulders, actually. Like, that's it. Look what this job's done to my body. It's like, you've not won the argument, pal. Like, WWE just seems like a place that's there to torture you. It tortures you physically. It tortures you personally. It tortures you emotionally. And that's not including the times that every character's positioned against an authority figure that for some reason doesn't want that character to succeed on the show that they own. Like, that's what stuck out to me from this, because I cannot buy in to the rest of the bollocks. I thought the Brock Lesnar line was pretty cute, but after the Kofi Kingston match, we're back to receiving Drew McIntyre as like the top baby face. So the fact that they think they can just toss that off and then have us forget about it next week because it's all about Hell in a Cell, like, that's condescending to me. It won't be to some that probably thought this was awesome, but it's condescending to me.
Yes, succinct fact of the matter is that it's turning this guy heel. In plain sight, death by a thousand cuts. Like, he's coming across as this unlikable, entitled guy. I've called him the skid mark before, and I'll call him the skid mark again. He's got no right to be in this title picture. He's been beaten out of it, and yet he's just Drew McIntyre. Like, it's just the unlikable, entitled traits that they almost involuntarily sort of apply to these characters, because the idea is we couldn't possibly do a new title feud every month. That's just not in the MO or the DNA of the company. So they'll do it three times every time. And the more times it happens and the less effort they craft into building the character and putting them on the challenge, it just looks like a total knob. It's the kind of thing that makes me halfway like, God damn it, Kevin Owens is good. Because Kevin Owens got put through this ringer on SmackDown a few months ago. He never seemed like that much of a knob for just doing, you know what I mean? Like, because he's just a good sound bloke. I'm not saying Drew McIntyre isn't a very hard worker. Like, he seems like he's half decent crack. But the scripting is just making you hate him. And they are so inept that they don't realize that they're doing this. It's mere presence in this title picture, much less how he's being written in it, is bad. He's being written is an arsehole. I hate him now. I really liked Drew last year, but he's a knob now.
That was followed by Mace and T-Bar versus Lucha House Party.
Skip, please.
No, it's 2 minutes long.
All right. Okay.
Skip it and get to the frigging thing.
Do you want to do the skip in the voice? I was hoping you could do it in the voice.
Skip!
That's another member of Retribution, isn't it?
Yeah. Skip rope. And what I can do is I can like... use like a lasso or something. Gee, my brain is...
Skip rope and hopscotch.
That's Alexa, please.
Yeah, Mason T-Bar murdered Lucia House Party and bit pinned Grand Metalik with a double choke slam. And they cut a promo gun. I don't know what they said. I didn't write it down, I'll be perfectly honest. Anyway. All that. It's now time for this.
It's short, it's crap, it's wrestling related. The 5-star review.
Nailed it! And this week's 5-star review is brought to you by Bad Punter. If you want your name associated with the 5-star review, if you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related for us to review instead of a god awful Monday Night Raw segment, subscribe to What Culture Wrestling and leave us a 5-star review, just like Bad Punter, who writes, "Thanks to you all for helping me get through the numerous lockdowns we have had in Ireland." And then he says, "Wilborn with his atrocious attempt at an Irish accent." Oh. Hamlet with his cautious optimism with WWE. That's gone. And Sidgwick, who's like the grumpy old man in the Cadbury's advert, throwing back all the kids' stuff, only happy with AEW. Yeah. He said, for my five-star review, can you look at Milkomania from 2001 with the Alliance's Austin Appreciation Night? Brilliant podcast. Thank you for that, Bad Punter. Hamlet, set the scene for Milkomania.
Right, so Steve Austin was really, really funny as a heel. Like, very, very entertaining. It was tanking the whole business. Even he would say as much now. Massive catastrophic error, financially speaking, for everybody. But it was, like, broadly entertaining. The Austin run now exists as, you know, that meme of the person with the face mask on, the slapjack mask, but they're, like, streaming tears, angry tears behind them. That's all of WWE under heel Steve Austin in 2001. He's a megalomaniac. The Alliance is an absolute disaster. The invasion's botched. All of it's ruined, as you can tell, by about 40 guys that should have been making the money that were instead just in the ring in Steve Austin t-shirts singing along with him. So all you could really do was just try and, like, bask in the glory of Steve Austin's heel performance. I know there will be loads of people listening to this that loved that, just earnestly loved it. I was 16 and I was old enough to see that this was failing. The thing I loved was dying in front of me. And it was like a really slow and protracted death. So, like, it didn't hurt as much as one might think, having, like, had the, like, this greatest era of all time, boom period, blah, 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 blah. But it was dying. But stuff like this and stuff like Steve Austin's promos were sometimes able to distract you from that. And that's about the kindest that can be.
Mm.
This payoff is fantastic. It's, like, brilliant WWE production, in that not only is this, like, a really strong visual, but it's a parody of something that was also a really strong visual. So they knew themselves really well. They knew their audience really well. They still knew how to do this, but things were going south. Things were dying.
So they're all in the ring. We watched the highlights version of this. I didn't need to hear Stephanie McMahon sing, was it Wind Beneath My Wings she sang?
Yeah. And really long, this went, like, really long.
We watched the 3-minute version because but it's just fun, like you say, when he's just talking and everyone's just kissing his ass. It's like Tommy Dreamer, Bubba Ray Dudley, Chris Kanyon, Mike Awesome's there, isn't he? There's a lot of them. And he's looking at them all. He says, look at you. You make me so proud. Everybody's got an ECW, WCW old shirt on. Everybody's... And he stops and he realizes one person is not wearing a big kiss-ass T-shirt to Stone Cold Steve Austin, and that's Taz. Taz has got his own shirt on, big orange shirt. Kind of hard to miss, really. And Stone Cold walks over to him, gets in his face, and you think, uh-oh, Taz is going to flip here. He's going to do something. He's definitely not going to be made to look like a little bitch. He says, what are you doing? What kind of shirt's that on your chest? And throughout this, he does the whole, what? Whilst Taz is like, oh no, I messed up, I'm sorry, sort of thing. Is that a Stone Cold shirt? What? Is that an ECW shirt? What? Is that a WCW shirt? What? I thought you were here to appreciate Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I just want to say at this point, like, what? Right at that point, it was like when crowds first saw Chaplin. Like, I include myself in that. Like, pissing myself at that. What? And him, like, checking what time his watch was on his wrist in the middle of a match on his tape. It didn't last, and obviously it killed everything. It killed everything for a while. But, like, there's a reason why it did. Like, initially, you're like, wow, that's comedy completed then. Saying what after every line. That's it. Finish that.
I'll swear, this is what, 2001? I'll swear this was secondary school days. A friend of mine thought it was a good idea to start the what thing when a teacher was trying to, like, okay, kids, today we're going to be learning about the geography of Africa. What? Like, don't do it. It's not the same. You're losing the room. Like, this girl's going, why does he keep saying that?
I was in geography or history in year 7. Substitute teacher was trying to control the rambunctious kids. She went, I've got two words for you. You know, mate, it's like, suck it! And I've got bogged. Right there. Absolutely right there. And I was just realizing in telling that anecdote that I told the teacher I sucked my cock when I was 11 years old. You just don't really put the two things together. You know that he's not saying suck my kneecap, he's saying suck my cock. But at the same time, you don't really think that's going to be interpreted by a teacher.
I'm waiting with Sid at the same age. I used to like crotch chop my mum. It's not ideal, is it? Not ideal. Oh, God.
Do you ever have that thing where you're caught? Do you ever have that thing where you're caught saying or doing or like writing a note that said something that was really offensive and they went, right, go up and write on the board, right? Mate of mine got caught when we were learning about World War One, passing a note.
Where's this going?
He got caught passing a note and therefore had to write on the board. So we're all just looking at this throughout the rest of the class, don't forget. He's trying to carry on and talk about, you know, the horrors of World War One whilst on the board is written, Sir Sucks Sorry. Sir Sucks Trench Cock.
Oh, I love so much the escalation of trench foot to trench cock. I love, you learn about the war and they've worked up the leg. Oh, can you imagine how bad trench foot? What about trench cock?
What about trench cack?
Yeah. Anyway.
Trench cock sounds like a Chikara character, doesn't it? Trent Seven versus Trench Cock.
Oh, God. Oh,
man.
We'll never stop this Raw review for this exact reason, for things like this.
Sir Sucks Trench Cock.
Yeah, he's respectful.
That's a good juxtaposition.
Oh, dear. So, anyway, he's bollocking Taz. Take that stupid shirt off. Take that damn shirt off. And he rips Taz's shirt right down the middle. Just sprays it open wide. He's about to, you know, I don't know what's going to happen next. But regardless, Kurt Angle's music hits and the roof comes off the building. And they're saying, oh, it's Kurt Angle. And JR, it cuts to just behind the Tron. And here he comes in his little milk truck. JR says, my God, what is that? That's Kurt Angle, all right, but it's a damn milk truck. Kurt Angle is driving a milk truck right up to the ring. He almost knocks the ring over, doesn't he? He crashes right into it. Backs it up a bit, climbs out and starts with the milk cartons. And JR shouts, he's throwing milk cartons at the Alliance. Don't worry, though. Stasiak's coming. Here comes Stasiak. Kurt Angle just throws him straight into the hood of the trunk. What an idiot. Brilliant. Angle is hurling those milk cartons. He's become the Olympic dairy man. He gets the hose, starts spraying milk. Oh my God, that's milk. Milkomania is running wild. This is stopping every single member of the Alliance from attacking him, this jet of milk. They're all pratfalling all over the place. They're trying to get out of the way. They're getting soaked. Meanwhile, Austin is protecting himself and Deborah with just the belt. He's just holding the belt in front of his face and standing there getting drenched. JR, just this is the reason why he's so good. Maybe less so when he says Pax Welsh at Double or Nothing for some bloody reason. Anyway, he says, it's Milkman Madness. My God, you got milk. And the line of the night, the Million Dollar Princess has become a dairy queen. Kurt Angle has got milk and Austin and the Alliance are getting humiliated by Kurt Angle. Look at Kurt Angle. He's climbing on top. I didn't realize this at the time, how slowly and carefully he climbs up on the top of the milk wagon, the milk truck. Look at Kurt Angle. He's standing on top of the milk wagon. And then he gets two big cartons. And now he's pulling out the heavy stuff. It's homogenized. No skimmed milk for Kurt Angle. Cold milk and cookies. What a combination. Kurt Angle is the Olympic dairy man. Milkomania has run wild on Raw. And there's that great shot of a like disgusted, confused, soaked Stone Cold Steve Austin with milk dripping from his goatee as the clip fades. Sid, your memories of this?
My memories are, it's like gallows humor in it. Something you can laugh at while everything's dying around you. This is a good thing and a rubbish thing. Just you're not allowed to say this many new things as if the things. Milkomania, he's the Olympic dairy man. They're just basically trying to focus group a load of merch.
Yeah.
A load of fan signs all at once. And it's like, oh, this is not organic at all.
I like how in mid-2001, Jim Ross said, it's homogenized, and confirmed it to be true, and then it was forever.
So we go to the comments section next. Once again, these do not reflect the views of myself, the Dudley Boys, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling. Ubraj starts us off by saying, this can't be real, right? Why would they waste so much milk? So, got his priority sorted. I mean, I've heard of wrestling being questioned, the reality of wrestling being questioned, legitimacy, but milk? Can't be real milk, right?
Enough to go around.
It was real. Stephanie McMahon said it was in her hair and it stunk. On one of them top 10 countdown things on the network. It's all there.
Simeon Diaz, dark this, writes, if only my stepdad had lived long enough to see this moment. Sorry?
Right, move on.
Is that like is there a missing context clue? That, like,
I don't know. There's no comment from Simeon. It's what he would have wanted. Chris McDowell, unresolved anger issues here. God, Deborah was so annoying no matter what she did, even just standing there. She's not doing it. She's just stood there. Kristen, always, there was always one in there who makes it weird. Just writes, oh, I'd love some, please.
I'm wanting some of Kurt Angle's bitty.
Cameron, I'm just going to read this. You take what you want from it. Cameron writes, I love can go eat your favourite wrestler, Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle is my favourite. Thanks for that, Cameron. Solid contribution there. Just read it. What I've gone to post. I love can go eat your favourite wrestler, Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle is my favourite. Yep, I think that sums up my opinion on this post. And Sank, I feel like we've had Sankit on before as the final comment. Because Sankit writes, girls be like, I ordered low fat milk. This is full cream. Please take it back. Stupid bitches.
I don't think I've ever heard a girl be like that before.
Girls be like, what's this? Off and turn it off.
Oh, so anyway. Thanks to Bad Punter for that one. Subscribe to What Culture Wrestling. Leave us a 5-star review. I mean, that wasn't crap, was it? But it's better than Raw. Short crap, wrestling related, you know the deal. Oh, God, we've got to get back to Monday Night Raw now. And this is going to be a future 5-star review. Alexa Bliss is on her swing set.
That's what you're going to say, because Ricochet was short crap and wrestling related.
I'm not talking to you. Okay. Sorry. Got to unplug her today. She's invited Reginald to a playground to celebrate his big win. And then in the ring, Sheamus enters. He talks about how happy he was to be United States champion, to have the gold and get back on the road soon and defend his title in every major city. Careful. He said, he quite rightly showed a video of Humberto Carrillo and Ricochet trying to embarrass him last week, where they came across as complete knobheads, because didn't Humberto Carrillo jump him after the bell after he'd been beaten and then Ricochet got involved, basically?
Probably.
But he said they acted like scumbags, and that's why he's not going to defend his title against them, but he's going to beat them back to back and send them back to catering. What actually happened was Ricochet and Sheamus fought for 1 minute, Humberto Carrillo's music hit, And Ricochet rolled up Sheamus. Then Carrillo faced Sheamus, who was obviously furious. Carrillo was making a comeback, twatted Sheamus right in the nose, 100% broke it. It did add to the visual, I'll give you that. I don't want it to happen to Sheamus, but blood streaming down his nose whilst he's furiously trying to murder Humberto Carrillo did look great. He takes Carrillo to the outside. Ricochet's checking on Carrillo, so Sheamus just kicks him in the head, sets up for a bro kick. Ricochet slides in. Sheamus goes after him. Carrillo, schoolboy, 1, 2, 3. He's been pinned by both. He's furious. And Carrillo and Ricochet celebrate like they've both got legitimate victories over the United States champion, Michael Hamflett.
Well, it's the women's championship by another name, this, isn't it? You got three losers, different types of losers, but all fundamentally losers. Made up of characters that you might have once really liked or wanted the best for that you don't care about anymore because WWE has made you not care. Just miserable booking of all of them, Sheamus included. He's been sucked into this now as well. Gone is the bizarre and strange ability he had to make his bit of Raw interesting through like force of physical will, basically. That's disappeared because instead they're doing this. Well, it's Beat the Clock by another name. They're just not calling to Beat the Clock. They're all still going a minute, 2 minutes or whatever. It's still Sheamus the Bully and these scrappy young kids and all that. It's just nonsense. It's nonsense television. It's not pro wrestling. It's just nonsense television.
It's not pro wrestling. My take is that it's literally anti-wrestling. You've got a champion getting beat twice in 6 minutes. Anti-wrestling. Anti the way to do things. You've got two ostensible baby faces ganging up on the heel. Anti-wrestling. You've got two baby faces you can't root for, anti-wrestling, celebrating a win that doesn't mean anything and has no stakes, anti-wrestling. Vince McMahon is a horrible old twat with a decaying brain. And this is anti-wrestling that makes the heroes of the hour, the guys you're meant to like, the guys whose t-shirts you're meant to buy, the guy, and none of this matters anymore because the rights fees have ruined everything in horrible unholy union with Vince McMahon's brain rot. And I just couldn't hate the baby faces more. I could not think less of them. Anti-wrestling.
Then we had, I think, a number one contenders match. Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke versus Naomi and Lana with Natalya and Tamina on commentary. This was dreadful. Dreadful stuff, this. Naomi gets taken out on the outside. That allows Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke to hit a double team neck breaker on Lana. Dana Brooke pins Lana and they lean over and say, yeah, we're coming for those belts, whilst Natalya and Tamina pose with them after laughing off their competition on commentary, Sid.
Very poorly worked pro wrestling. I hadn't trailed off. That's literally the only thought. The only thought I could conjure.
Yeah, this was like a really awful match. And yet it was one of the few things so far on this episode that you could attempt to analyse when reviewing a wrestling show. Mm. It was a wrestling match where there was title ramifications, ridiculous as that may seem for this match. But like the winning team that were going to be the best, we're going to get a title shot on commentary. The tag team champions were there doing what tag team champions are supposed to do, which is to put over the prestige of those belts for Tamina to talk about how much it, and I believe her, legitimately means to have that title. Mm-hmm. For Natalya, and I believe her, to say, we want to make these the belts, these things to chase for. That's what these women are wrestling for. Like, everybody's trying to do their jobs as effectively as they possibly can, but through in the ring, poor training and horrific execution, and on the commentary table, dialogue that you absolutely cannot believe in, as much as the wrestlers do. Like, this was a mess. This was a real disaster of execution when, for about 5 minutes, there was an attempt to just do pro wrestling the normal way. Unfortunately, you had six people that were either like ill-experienced or ill-equipped to be able to do it.
I hate it when anyone, whether it be these champions, whether it be any other champion, whether it be anyone in like MMA, when they get asked, who do you want to face next? I'll face anyone. Yes, that's a given. Whether you are, you know, in control of booking who you face next or not, I know you'll face anyone. So say someone, especially if you know who you're going to face next, because then I think, oh, You're invested in this, so I'll invest in this. I don't know why I got annoyed by this. I sort of trailed off.
It's because you're a really good and experienced interviewer, and you've had too many ones go badly in that exact question.
Who do you want to face?
I felt lived in.
Who do you want to face? Anyone. Yep. It's going to be from a pool of anyone, so probably anyone will be. It was a good choice. Also, I thought it sort of wandered off in my mind watching this match. It was dreadful. Are the women's tag team championships, here's a theory for you, Sister Abigail, because they change you, don't they? Bailey and Sasha, they're not friends anymore. The Iconics, bleh. Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, boy, they've gone different ways. And now Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler are, I don't know. So
they just can't book. I know you're doing a bit, but the reality is they can't book.
And yeah. And everything's look, everyone that hasn't held a women's title still gets along.
Oh, good. Another rematch. Cedric Alexander, Shelton Benjamin. This one went 10 seconds, I think. They literally went, I remember last week when he hit the thumb in the eye and hit the neuralizer. Just do that bit of the match again. That's literally what happened. And Jimmy Smith, first night went, hang on, he won that way last week. Yep. Get used to it, Jimmy. It's no going comment. To be happening more and more regularly.
No comment.
Was it LeBron James in that backstage thing with Bad Bunny? It was, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's okay that we skipped over it. I'm just thinking that, a big deal. Like, Bad Bunny, again, remains more effective a promotional vehicle for WWE than 95% of its roster, as evidenced with the very match that followed it. These two complete losers having followed a few more losers. You got this major, major star on Raw, tangentially connected to WWE. None of the wrestlers have a hope in hell's chance of having as much impact as he did at all.
This next segment and what followed was really, I was like, what? So Elias, they've got a tag team title match, Elias and Jackson Ryker, because of AJ Styles getting pinned or whatever. And he's in the back and Jackson Ryker's just staring, you know, 1,000-yard stare. And Elias says, he's trying to psych him up and say, come on, we're going to win these tag titles tonight. And he says, oh, you're not even listening. Have you ever been in a battle? And I realise it's Memorial Day weekend, or it had been, of course. And then Ryker just goes, have you ever been in a battle? Because I served in Iraq. And he just left. And I was just confused. And I know, you know, possibly this was a lead into the disharmony between these two that was going to lead to the split. Like, this split had to have been booked today. Oh, yesterday, couldn't it? It must have been a handful of it, because it came out of bloody nowhere.
Well, yes and no. We did a Money in the Bank podcast, did we not, which is available wherever you get your podcasts. And did I not give you cause for great concern when I said, Jackson Ryker started wearing trunks. Vince McMahon sees him every week in Gorilla. Look at him. Did I not say that? And now we have a split about 6 weeks out from Money in the Bank. Just enough time for Jackson Ryker to have a singles run, because Damien Priest is the new Dawn. Gone off there, have you? Jackson Ryker started wearing trunks and Vince McMahon gets to watch him once a week. So, briefcase, baby.
This was odd. I didn't enjoy the utterly contrived writing, like Pee Wee Herman's Playhouse and the word of the day. why would he tell a soldier who you know is a soldier? He's meant to be your mate. It's kind of a big part of his life.
You know why? It's because he's forgotten.
Forgotten? So it's like, of course he's going to respond to that. It's just pathetic. And the idea of pushing Jackson Ryker is horrible. Like, it is horrible. It's so funny how this company is just slowly deciding to just embrace the hate. That is itself.
Just quick story. When I was first starting out in commercial radio, I was helping out as a producer backstage at our big music event that we did. And we had James Blunt there, you know, notorious, like, funny guy, but also, you know, talented, very talented. And former army general, I think, or he certainly served, you know, in the army. And the guy I was with, I'm not having a go. Well, I am. He wasn't very good at his job. Still working, though. And he said, James, of course, you used to serve in the army, served in Afghanistan. How does here being here at Live compare? Sorry? How does working at a live music show compared to serving in Afghanistan? Yeah, I didn't learn my interview techniques from him, unsurprisingly. Speaking of interviews, though, Kevin Patrick is backstage with Kofi Kingston. Kofi says, he says his friends and family were not a detriment to his success. They were the reason for it. He doesn't understand why McIntyre's taking cheap shots at him, because he's a knobhead, apparently. McIntyre, that is, not Kofi. He respected what McIntyre accomplished. Didn't appreciate the cheap shot he took when comparing their match against Brock Lesnar. He said, yeah, I did lose to Lesnar. I also beat Lashley, which you can do on several occasions. Completely valid. And he planned on beating McIntyre tonight and beating Bobby Lashley to become, once again, WWE champion. They're trying to make this have a big fight feel, I suppose, Sige.
Yeah. I'm getting a bit hungry and need a piss.
I found myself quite rooting for Kofi Kingston in the main event as a result, which is surely not what I wanted, is it? Like...
Right. Raw tag team titles on the line. AJ Styles and Big George taking on Elias and Jackson Ryker. I'm not joking. Corey Graves said, not sure it's a good idea to have AJ Styles start this match. Yeah, he's not that talented, is he, Corey? He's only, what, won pretty much every single belt in the company. Yeah.
We did get beat in 2 minutes off Ryker last week, so it makes some kind of awful sense that he said it.
Ridiculous. Anyway, going back and forth, him and Elias. Ryker tags himself in. Elias sort of goes, Styles Ox are both out the ring, takes him down with a drop kick. Ryker goes for the tag later on in the match, but Elias inexplicably turns on him, hops off the apron, walks to the back. Styles tags in Big Jord, almost comes in, murders him, attacks him, short arms clothesline, tags in Styles, phenomenal forearm. AJ Styles and Omos retain the tag team titles. This came out of absolutely nowhere, Hamlet.
Yeah, throwing tomatoes must be the new Sister Abigail, because it really changed these people, didn't it? Yeah, it did come out of nowhere. But I'm not even going to take my own horn for it, because it's Vince McMahon, isn't it? It's the oldest take in the book. You just look at Jackson Ryker. Of course he's going to get a go. Of course he's going to get a turn. Yeah, his character's dead. The tag belts are dead. That
everything's
enthusiasm, dead. That enthusiasm for AJ Styles and almost at WrestleMania is dead. All gone. But Jackson Ryker might enter Money in the Bank, and then we'll have to be this like nervous, like outsider that will at least have one climb that there'll be a real live crowd for that will get incredibly stressed out about. Vince McMahon, I love it. He despises this audience. He can't wait to have them back in the seats so they can be anxious and miserable. He cannot wait.
Just one thing to add, because I really do, I'm getting hungry, need a piss. It's basically, I'm off the clock at this point in my head. What was I actually going to say? I can't remember. Had there. Jackson Ryker. I'm trying to jog my memory. Like, I'm trying to summon a thought.
Dead. It's all dead.
It's all dead. Jackson Ryker. Oh, this is about him. Is it about him? AJ style? That's gone. I don't care.
He's forgotten.
Yeah, I've forgotten. I'll try and bring it back. That's completely gone. Sorry.
While Elias is walking through the back, Kevin Patrick approaches him and he says, Ryker's unhinged, unpredictable. We're going back on the road, traveling from town to town. I don't want to be around Ryker anymore. I mean, I don't blame him for that sort of motivation, to be honest, but...
Well, he's a drifter, isn't he?
The optics of this, they're so bad at everything that I don't even know if this is callous and on purpose. Is Elias basically saying, God, he's a bit of a bummer with his PTSD?
I don't know. Yet.
What's going on? Because the vacant stare, the fact that, oh, he's unhinged, and, you know, is he just saying, oh, guys, you're bringing out, oh, he's got PTSD.
I'm not having this guy ruin every bloody bank holiday. Every Memorial Day comes out, if he's going to be like this, forget about it. I'm not going to be nice.
I don't know.
There was an element of that, wasn't there? Like, can't be asked for that.
Not good.
Speaking of not good, Alexis Playground. Reginald walks in, just has a chat. Reginald's just like, yes, no bother. I'll just go to this spooky woman who talks to a doll. It's fine, no bother. Reginald says, well, she says, how are you? He says, oh, yeah, I feel great. My knee hurts a bit. But
back. My take is back. Oh, okay. Take on that whole development, right? It was a couple of weeks ago, T-Bar did the SpongeBob lettering format and went, Raw doesn't have a tag team division. Raw doesn't have a tag team division. And then he listed all the tag teams, and I'm just thinking, I can't wait for this tweet to get cool tweeted into oblivion. Like, in about 4 weeks, it's already happening. That's one tag team gone. Viking Raiders are just backstage doing nothing. Like, one by one, these teams are dying. If they were even like tag teams, if there was never a division, there was just a list of people that teamed together in the first place. But that tweet is aging like T-Ball's career.
So, yes, Reginald says, yeah, got a bit of a hurt your knee, but I'm all right, thanks. How are you? And Bliss says, oh, I haven't got a question for you, but I tell you who does.
At what point when we were analysing the show, we go, all right, shut up, I'm teeing this off.
I wouldn't have done it, but your little segue then gave me time to...
Oh, so it was mine. Great.
What did you make me do?
There she is.
Is it the main event?
So she says, Lily's got a question for you. And then they just sit there.
Lily's got a problem.
And Reginald just sits there. And she goes, oh, yeah, just remembered you got an ear, Lily, because I'm bonkers. And she wanted to know about Cirque du Soleil, apparently. But before he could answer, oh, one of the big unanswered questions there. In comes Shayna Baszler, kicks the crap out of Reginald. Probably could have done with doing that earlier, to be honest. Comes in, beats him up, sits down on the swing set. And Bliss says, you weren't invited. Lily doesn't like you. And Baszler says, you're becoming a problem. We need to have a chat. So I'll see you next week. You're right there. Just do it now. Why not just do it now? And then, I can't believe I wrote this. Baszler then got in Lily's face and said, you're just a stupid doll. I mean, this show's so bad. Me and Hamlet did a preview for it last Thursday and we're pretty bang on. So I dread to think what they're going to do next week. Siege, what do you make of this?
Nothing.
They've made a pig's ear of this, haven't they? Like, Shayna Baszler's not kicking out of this one.
Nope.
Like everything else, she did.
Dread it. Run from it.
Lily.
Sid, you alluded to it a second ago. Next came a segment that felt like it was out of a 2K game. You know when you create a character and they're like, oh, we need to set up a feud with you quite early on. We'll just have you interact with some chumps backstage and then some bad guy is going to come up and say some nasty things. Mansoor was there and the Viking Raiders were like, oh, mate, I mean, you've never been in front of crowds apart from like, you know, baying Saudi Arabia crowds that love and adore you. But when you see crowds, it's going to be great. But you need something to say. So why don't you say, right? And he yelled it back and they were like, oh, pretty good. And then they walked off and Mustafa Ali walked in and went, don't make friends or trust anyone. Anyway, why should I trust you? And he went, now you're getting a kid. It felt like something out of 2K, this, Sid.
A dork. A total dork they made him look like here.
Mansoor slapping down the test to Mustafa Ali. That is the test. What's this?
Hello? Did a rant at the expense of some fraudsters that went over well, so I was hoping to do another bit.
Yeah.
But the national insurance scam, like, I'm getting multiple phone calls per day. The worst thing is they've hired this old posh English twat to make it sound like convincing. Hello. Our national insurance number has been linked to some violent crimes. But it's basically some old biddy's going to go, Christ, he sounds authoritative. I'm in trouble. Insurance number. Right, okay, you dumb bit. Here's your credit card details. Just get a job.
That first hello was there. That's Brian walking in a poor London shop.
Hello.
Hello.
Sid, the only thing that made me smile about this Mansoor segment is being able to remind our audience, what was your name when you created a wrestler on 2K or whatever it was?
Mine?
No, sorry, Hamlet. Sorry.
Mike Hock. Took one hell of a beating.
Now you're getting it, Mike Hock.
Mike Hack.
Mike Hack stands alone on Monday Night Raw. Like Sid, you'll be up. He's over at the main event now.
So you're going to be my brother, Trench.
Drew McIntyre versus Kofi.
My cat.
Drew McIntyre.
That storyline with Triple H and Steve Austin, because they can't even touch my cat.
Drew McIntyre, Kofi Kingston. Much of what we saw last week until they just went out no contest. Kingston hit a few trust falls, went for another one. McIntyre caught him and hoied him over to the barricade, and it looked like he really messed him up by sort of throwing him into the LED boards, but that wasn't part of the story, so bollocks to that. McIntyre blocked an SOS and did look mint hitting that spinning Future Shock DDT. Got an earful from that. McIntyre goes to the Claymore. Kingston hits Trouble in Paradise. Near fall, McIntyre doesn't kick out, just grabs the bottom rope. Kingston fights back, comes off the top of the Hurricanrana, hits a penalty kick on the apron, double foot stomp off the apron to the outside, shoves McIntyre back in the ring, goes off the top, but gets hit with a mid-air claymore, sort of an upward claymore rather than the sideways one he normally hits people with, to allow McIntyre to get the 1-2-3. Enjoyable match. McIntyre wins. He's heading to hell in a cell against Bobby Lashley. They shake hands post-match, and Lashley comes out and poses with the belt afterwards. The show's finally over. Thank God for that, Sidge.
Really effective content. Went 22 minutes. That's what it is. You can't analyse it. I mean, you probably should, because it's not fair on the lads. You are, like, working really hard. Struggling to try and crack 22 minutes. Can you imagine? That's probably the source of the backstage stuff now. If you try and put yourself in the minds of, like, the guys on the roster, like, their new thing that they're probably talking about, because everyone bitches about their job. I don't have to do it. I'm privileged. And yet the show ruins it, so thanks for that, Raw. But, like, I've been in jobs where I've hated it, and they probably hate some of their jobs as well. And I can guarantee you that the primary source of, like, how long are you in? 22 minutes last week. What is the point in it going 22 minutes? Like, this one you can vaguely justify because it has stakes. Last week, can you imagine them going? The worst thing is, like, a lot of them are marks for it as well. Like, The Miz getting put in a 4-hour island death match is probably thinking, right, that's the thing to do on the Marine around here. So you can't, maybe that's a bad take. Maybe they're just absolutely desperate for this idea for 22 minutes. And the idea being, like, can you imagine, like, your favorite wrestler going 15, 22 minutes on pay-per-view? I remember, like, back in, like, a totally bygone era, like, if your favorite guy went 7 minutes on pay-per-view, that used to be a big source of, consternation. Like, oh, man, that had just had more time. They could have ended this awesome breakthrough performance and, like, maybe got themselves over as potential main eventers. That used to be a thing, incredibly. We're nowhere near that anymore. It's just the more content, the better. And this was really effective content. If you're from a WWE perspective, look, there were elements of this match that, if I'm just trying to not be cynical about, they worked, they adapted certain spots last week to try and make it seem like they'd learn from one another. Like, they tried to really work hard and make this a sequel, but who could possibly care? I mean, not me.
Yeah, like, this was worked. Like, you only have last week as a comparison. This was worked with, like, a great deal more urgency, but then you would if you knew that this one was actually getting a finish. Like, they would have absolutely kept themselves in third or fourth tops, like, last week, knowing that you were going to get that conclusion. So why would you go for it? Like, there was a bit, like, I really loved, like, the Drew hit the backbreaker, then looked like he wanted to dislocate both the Kofi shoulders at the same time, and then, like, plied him like he was just going to do something horrible on the top, and then got powerbombed for it. Like, went way, way, way too far into this, like, Drew McIntyre Scottish psychopath realm that he lost sight of what he was supposed to be doing. You know, just, like, just win a wrestling match in the efficient way you've been doing it. There was good stuff here. Like, Drew hits really, really hard. Kofi often bumps really, really hard. And there was loads of that here as well. So it felt like they were trying to make that, like, trying to make the work leap through the screen. But it is too long, especially after a 3-hour Raw, no matter the cheat codes that you input at the start of the show, the double speed, whatever it is that you've got to try and get through this, you know, fast forwarding the adverts, whatever. It's still too long as a Raw main event that you've seen already 1 week earlier. It's, you know, they're undone. They're all the wrestlers are always undone by everything that is this company. So this was as good as it could have been, which is still not that great. And the promos did a far more effective job of making you want Kofi Kingston to win. Yeah. So the result, if anything, when you're ending Raw with, you finish now, Bobby Lashley, like that was the intended vibe, but the actual one was, oh, this again, never mind.
Well, let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at...
M. Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to WhatCulture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, the NXT preview, and the Double or Nothing review coming later on today. And of course, if you want to suggest a five-star review, review something short, crap, and wrestling-related, just like Bad Punter did earlier on today, you can do that by subscribing to WhatCulture Wrestling and just leaving us a five-star review on there. But for now, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you soon.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.